Discussions with Ajahn Suchin in Bangkok, Thailand, May 2015. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Sarah, Suchin, John and Betty.
A point from before talking about Pakatupanisya, when we mentioned that all 89 cittas are conditioned by Pakatupanisya, so even for seeing now or hearing, for karma to bring it result, there has to be Pakatupanisya, like what desirable object is one looking for or something like this. Could you say a little bit more about how even Vipaka cittas now are conditioned by Pakatupanisya? Mm-hmm.
Someone likes to have seeing more often and the other might like to have the hearing more often. So that can be Pakatupanisya.
For karma to bring that result. So seeing is the result of karma. But why seeing? Why the result of karma at this moment? Because of Pakatupanisya, Pachya, as a support condition.
One likes to have seeing more often and one likes to have hearing more.
Some like to read Dhamma, some like to hear Dhamma, depending on Pakatupanisya, Pachya as well.
And some are more orally oriented.
Mm-hmm. But I've also been talking about liking seeing and then having seen as vipaka later on. And I've always wondered how that is. I mean, if you'd like to see and you get to see.
The accumulation of being attached to seeing or to hearing, mm-hmm, can be conditioned for wanting to have hearing or seeing more than the others.
Right, wanting, but what about result? It's nothing to do with result.
We just talk about Pakatupanisya Pachaya, that all can be everything which is conditioned.
Like tasting. Tasting is the result of karma, but because of the attachment to tasting, it's a condition for that tasting to occur too. No karma can bring its result without Pakatupanisya Pachya. There has to be the accumulation.
So it's like when sometimes they talk about attention being a fact of what's like attention drawn to visible object or to sound or to taste, depends. So that is an influence of what is going to be tasted, what is going to happen to the senses.
Attention, like attachment, is accumulated, right? What, or chanda, what is there interest in, or lobha, all these mental factors are accumulated by Pakatupanisya Pachya and support that karma to bring its result. Why does the karma bring its result at this moment? Because of these other factors. Like when one talks also about just before death, the karma, the kusala or akusala that arises at that moment because of Pakatupanisya Pachya.
So it sounds almost like wanting to have a particular experience is one of the conditions for that experience to arise. Although it's not wanting, the wanting at that time only, but the wanting in the past as well.
So that's why it's said that Pakatupanisya Pachya is the broadest condition, because every single citta in life is conditioned by Pakatupanisya Pachya. So as we know, when we say simply seeing is a result of karma, but there have to be many, many other conditions in order for that seeing to arise now.
Right, but I agree with Pakatupanisya Pachaya, but it depends at that moment. There could be other factors that act as Pakatupanisya Pachaya, not the wanting.
Right.
Right?
The arahat has no wanting, but the still seeing.
Still, right,
yeah.
Right.
So it's not that there has to be wanting. But it's just, Ajahn was just giving it as an example of how Pakatupanisya Pachya is a support condition.
Yes.
No matter kusala or anusala.
Pachaya is a support condition that I agree with for all experiences. But what is the pagatupanisya pachaya that I'm a bit confused about when you say it's wanting? Is
like now.
And wanting
interest
now
in seeing, wishing to seeing as a
and
condition.
That condition seeing?
Karma is the main condition, but it's there.
Can we simply say as just habits?
I understand the term. If it's habit, it's a habit for accumulated
and
reactions, but not
is habits.
But I don't understand when it comes to vipaka, how certain habits can condition vipaka.
The accumulation to attain, so one crave for or would like to have more.
When you say condition vipaka, there has to be the gamma there.
Yes,
but
the,
they
the
right, but there's a lot of previous gamma, and only certain previous gamma is going to bring result from time to time. So,
and the other thing is that
it has to be other conditions that determine which previous gamma is bringing result at the present moment.
Right, and the other thing is that one thing is akusala, so it should condition akusala vipaka. But when it's put that way, it sounds almost like you get what you wish for. Means, you know, like
whenever there is the result of kamma, there must be pagatupanisya pachaya as well, not only kamma pachaya.
For example, like interest in tasting or wishing to taste, and so much tasting in a day, so not just the result of karma, but easy to understand how the clinging to tasting supports the karma to bring that result of tasting. And actually it's the same with seeing.
I see the same problem. I can understand that the tendency, the habit of the attachment to taste can condition the act of picking up something to put in your mouth, you know, but...
But what kind of taste?
What kind of taste, right.
Mm-hmm.
So
depending on pagatupanisya pachaya.
Depending on the habit and the tendency and the interest.
And also previous karma, because you could intend to have a pleasant taste by choosing something that you like.
Uh-huh.
But in fact, it may be when it arrives, it may not be to your liking at all. So there's no way of knowing how it's going to turn
right.
out.
Right, so I'm fine with that. But, I mean,
but you choose one taste of ice cream rather than another because it's your preferred taste. And for another example of the preference for seeing over, say, hearing. Some people for relaxation like to listen to music. Others like to read a book.
So you're saying in the first case, in one case, that wanting conditions hearing, the other conditions seeing. Is that what the point is?
Not really. Well, there would be hearing and seeing anyway.
Yes.
Whether the wish to hear music or
right,
read a book was
right,
there or not.
Right.
But it has a bearing on what is being seen or heard.
And what is being heard.
Yeah. It doesn't condition the actual in the same way that the karma does. But it's a factor in what particular karma is to be brought to result at that time.
I don't think there's any point out the fine details, because then it's just speculating. It's enough just to understand that at this moment of seeing, many conditions support karma to bring its result, including pagatupanisya. I think it was Nina or someone brought up talking about music, giving a gift of music, and you said, oh, well, actually, this was just helping someone to have pleasant feeling. It couldn't be said to be a gift. And you said a gift is for something useful, such as food for eating, and suggesting that there cannot be a gift of
anything
sound.
Anything can be a gift.
Anything.
Yeah.
So this is why there was a little misunderstanding afterwards, because it sounded like if it wasn't for some useful purpose, it wasn't a gift.
What is the best
Dharma gift? Is yeah. the best mm-hmm. gift, for sure. Yeah.
And it doesn't depend on whether the other person appreciates or not. It's the intention, isn't it?
You like that person that's like this, but you want to give back.
No, I want to. No, I know. I think he likes it, and I give him, but he doesn't
so
like it.
You give what he likes.
Right. So, but if it turns out that he doesn't like, it's still a gift.
Yeah.
Dharma being the greatest gift, does that mean the gift to receive? Doesn't the greatest gift you can receive is the gift of Dharma.
It's also the greatest gift
you can give. Yeah, but I wasn't thinking about Dharma. I was just thinking about generally.
But it's like if you know someone doesn't like
listening to music, you don't play them music, you don't give them music, so it's
yeah.
what they would
if
like.
You know.
And if someone has no interest in the Dharma at all, you don't give them
if
a.
You know. But if you think it's going to help and you give,
it's not
a gift?
Like if you're giving music, it's not like
you're thinking it's going to help, it's just what someone would
enjoy,
like to
or,
have.
Yeah,
or,
whatever
yeah.
someone, the other
what would be pleasant feeling for someone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you give someone a food, it's not like you're thinking it's necessarily
yeah,
useful,
yeah.
it's just what they would like. And
so in the case of Dhamma, it's not meant to be an object of pleasant feeling, it's just.
In the case of Dharma, it's one of those.
It's what is the only useful thing, so of course you help, and that's why never mind what the day is, it's
so
what
is
most helpful.
There is a difference when giving Dharma and giving sensuous objects, a big difference.
Of course.
I give you this. Is it a gift?
It's a gift.
No.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So it has to be something that is useful.
But I think when they talk about a gift of music, they think the person who is gifted in being able to compose music and this kind of thing, that's what they usually talk about as a gift of music. A person being born, say, like a Mozart.
No, it's not that. It's
not
like,
that?
Like playing for someone so that they can have pleasant feeling, yes. Giving a gift, yes.
It's still a gift.
But it's, of course, not a high-level gift.
But when it's useful to someone, it's all right. It can be a gift.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
When I give the cough sweets,
it's not Dharma, but it's what is useful or helpful.
Also, when we were here in January,
the few little bits and pieces for tidying up, one of our friends, he mentioned Sutta, I think it's the Agata Sutta. I think it was Sariputta who was speaking about different kinds of individuals, different accumulations, and the person brought up the sutta to stress that it's always better to see the good in someone's accumulation. So there's the one who has bad behavior through the body but good speech, and then the opposite, bad speech but good behavior through the body, and the one who's not very good at either, doesn't have very good bodily behavior or speech, and then one who only has a kusala, and how one should look for the good qualities. And so the one who has good speech but poor bodily behavior, you appreciate the speech. Now, people read this as though it's a prescription or instruction that one should always dwell on the good points, but of course we know what's important is understanding and kusala. Do you have any comment?
What jitta looks for the others? weak point or bad point?
Oh, that would be akusala, but the one that looks for the good point can be kusala or akusala. So it's just coming back to the citta. It's not so much rules, but just understanding of citta.
Can I go back to the topic of karma a little bit?
Yes.
Because I had a discussion with Kunopadon in Nakornayo. We are talking about when in text they talk about results of karma. For example, being born rich into a rich family. And I'm not sure how we are supposed to understand that. In what sense?
What one experiences when one is rich.
Pleasant
feeling. Right, but not everyone who is born rich gets to experience. Yeah.
So it's no one, only seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching.
So would one consider a person who does not have a big bank account, but enough to
experience pleasant things.
In that sense, rich.
Like the servants.
Okay. So that is rich. That is what the text mean by rich.
It's just referring to kusala vipaka, because usually if one is very hungry, there's no kusala vipaka through the body sense. So it's just referring to kusala vipaka. So it's actually referring to moments of seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and touching. Just because one's born rich doesn't mean the seeing is always kusala vipaka.
Right.
So it's just a shorthand for kusala vipaka.
Right, but Kunopada brought one point up about karma that produces vipaka in daily life and karma that produces birth in a particular, say, household, in a rich household, that one also has some kind of bearing, being born in a rich as in a poor household.
What does it mean to be born in a
rich household in terms of dharmas?
Different vipakas.
Different
cheetahs,
different
vipakas.
Actually,
there's no rich household.
Is there?
Yeah,
there's
that's right.
Right, but it comes down to this. The karma that conditions rebirth, the karma that conditions birth, does it have any influence on what can happen, other karmas that come later on?
Yes, because the pratisandhicitta collects all the karma which can produce results just in that life.
Even the kusala and akusala.
So even if it's birth as a human result of kusala karma, it's collected all the akusala karma too. So that's why in life, not just kusala vipaka, but also akusala vipaka.
So not counting exceptions, but generally, a person who is born into a poor family is likely also to experience akusala vipaka more than someone born in a rich family.
Not necessarily.
I'm not talking about exceptions. I'm saying generally.
Generally
is wrong. But this is what it's meant when it's talking about.
In short, shorthand, or rich family or something, it's just saying generally more kusala vipaka, but it's not saying kusala vipaka all the
time. So when we say
the karma which produces that patisandhi has collected all the karma that will bring result during
possible.
That lifetime,
yes.
Possible during that lifetime, and then next lifetime the patisandhi has all the accumulated karma that can bring that result in that lifetime.
Also on the topic of
karma, you mentioned that kusala and akusala karma cannot be without mind door. Usually when we talk about speech and deeds, of course, it have to be mind door cheetahs, but we know that understanding, for example, can arise in sense store. Can also arise in the sense store, just like wrong view can arise.
No, seeing can accompany by it, right?
No, but during the eye-door process, the kusala and the akusala, there can be the kusala cheetahs
without panya.
With panya. So there can be, and if it is with panya, it can be kama at that moment. So
like now?
Like now.
Yeah.
Impossible to tell. So can be an eye-door process as well as mind-door process. So when we say that kusala or kusala kama has to be in mind-door process.
For example, what about at moment of right awareness arises? Through what dhavya?
Any door.
Kama?
Usually would be mind door, but if it's right awareness or right understanding, can be through sense door as well.
Depending on what kind of karma, like for akusal karma, killing cannot be just through the...
And dana has to be through mind door. When we talk about
killing and mind door, body door, mano karma or kaya karma, depending on whether it's planned or not, and the detail, and if it's planned, like when one lays a trap, one knows it's through its mano karma, whereas if it's just swatting a mosquito without thinking, it's kaya karma. But actually, we know so many different cheetahs, so many mind-door processes.
So it's not important as karma,
right?
No matter through what dhavya.
Otherwise, it's like thinking of a situation, isn't it? Because actually, so many processes.
Useful just now that you differentiate between setting up a trap and just swatting, because setting up a trap is like planning, and that time no being
so
a skill.
It's kusala kama through mind door. It has to be a kusala kama, no matter what doorway. But to differentiate the two, whether it is kaya kama or mano kama, we have to think about whether it's planned before.
So, but at least we can see the strength of the karma. It's different.
Right. Yeah.
You can see if it's very more deliberate moments. And planned. And
totally prepared. Stronger, akusala, more. Not just a burst of anger.
But actually, when we think about it,
we're thinking about different situations. In fact, there are so many cheetahs, and so... Again, one can speculate, is it mano karma or kaya karma, but it doesn't really matter. But just to show the difference, I think.
Apart from the difference of classification, is there any other difference? Does it have any effect?
They are different, but not necessary to think about it. Because it doesn't condition right understanding, it's no self.
And it also, if one's
reading the text and it's referring to killing through mind or body door, it just helps to understand what is meant. Actually, just different dhammas and different cheetahs conditioning different rupas in different ways.
A friend wrote the following,
and it didn't quite make sense to me. We're talking about visible object, and he was having a discussion with someone who had the mistaken idea that all one could say is that visible object is desirable or undesirable. And this friend wrote, talking about visible object, that at times it can be a very tiny object, but not just one kalapa or even hundreds, much more. At other times it might be very large. Can one talk about visible object in terms of being tiny or large? Or I think that's just thinking about it.
It depends on the four primary rupas. big or large, small or tiny. We just talk about the four primary rupas because visible object arises with it. Without the four primary rupas, there cannot be the visible object, visible reality.
What does it mean to say the four primary
rupas okay. can be very tiny or very large?
Yeah, okay. Tiny one. Yeah.
But isn't that just an idea of what is
not visible? Idea. Visible object is there. It's here. Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. Not like this.
To me, that sounds like an idea of visible
an object, no, not just that which
no,
is seen.
Idea. Is it the idea of the truth? Yeah.
Well, I can understand, Ajahn, the small and large, and if that small piece is there, won't even be seen. So the connection between small and large is in that sense, that if the other rupas, the primary rupas, are large, as we talk conventionally, then it can be seen also. And if it's large and colorful, it'll be probably seen a result of kusala karma. And when it's small, that same colorful would not even be seen.
When or it's big, you can see it clearer. But when it's very tiny, you cannot see like that.
Isn't that immediately
an idea of something when you think of, oh, this tiny one? Because at the moment of seeing, it's not just this which is seen, it's just that which is seen, not just...
Yes, but that is seen.
And when we talk about visible
object, and the visible object is just one rupa in the kalapa which is seen. So if there is a suggestion that the visible object is hundreds of kalapas, but actually that would mean hundreds of visible objects seen, but actually at a moment of seeing it's only one
kind,
one reality in one kalapa that is seen for an instant. I think we cannot talk about seeing hundreds of kalapas at that moment.
But the suggestion even from Ajahn seemed to be that there's a relationship between whether it's going to be one, a few kalapas or more that's going to come one after the other. So I think what that, I'm not sure who wrote, but maybe means is that in some cases it requires, it's going to be a case of many, many visible objects arising.
But then it's that many, many visible objects.
Not one visible object. Here the suggestion was that one visible object can be many, many kalapas. Tiny kalapas.
Oh,
that
okay,
doesn't make...
Okay,
and even when it's many, many, it's actually
one visible object that's experienced through the eye-door process, and then mind-door processes, and then another visible object. So it can only ever be one visible object in one kalapa that is seen at a time, not many, many.
Right. So maybe there comes in the Pakatupanisepache. The mind door is Pakatupanisepache for another moment of seeing that same object, right? Again and again and again.
Because of interest in this one.
There may be conditions for seeing again and again with...
How many kalapas?
Well, at a moment of
seeing what is visible for an instant, at that moment, one kalapa only seen, but many, many moments of seeing. There have to be countless before there can be any idea or impression of a
costume. Usually when we talk about kalapa, we talk about the four primary rupas.
Because it takes the four primary rupas
to condition that visible object, but actually only one kalapa experienced at a time, one reality in one moment of seeing.
That's right, no one here at all.
Well, maybe the idea of kalapa is If you had a faulty computer and screen that can generate just a short few pixels, and it's not, nothing's going to be, you know, there won't be anything to appear that is identifiable. But if it it's large enough, then there's something that can be.
As soon as there's any impression of a cough sweep, we know there have to be
many, yeah.
But at a moment of seeing only.
I mean, what I mean is that although seeing is experienced, a visible object is experienced in some cases, it's too short, too tiny, too little to form an idea of something.
Totally unknown. So when you say how many kalafas here, what do you mean?
Because uncountable.
And it's like now, even though there's no special interest about talking to you, countless visible objects seen and of different kinds and countless, but.
And all this apakatubanisya padya for other moment.
Visible objects. But when you say, oh, it can be tiny or large, isn't this already an impression from the seeing of countless kalapas already, because actually at a moment of seeing it's not tiny or large, so it's actually the impression
with
or the
sign in between.
With yes, must be.
So shape and form.
Must be, so it's the shape or form. So it's already the impression of shape and form because of having seen countless visible objects, but the actual visible object that is seen doesn't have shape or form or size or tiny or large, so it's the impression from the seeing of countless is the limita.
Refers to the compact, isn't it? That things appear as items or articles.
Limita.
Yes.
The impression, the shape, or form. From having seen countless kalapas, right?
Guna.
Came up last time in January that there's been some further discussion about is you asked a friend what someone was wearing a black scarf and you said what color is the scarf, so let's use what color is my scarf, so we could say what color is Sukin's turban, and of course we say his
memory.
Turban is black because of memory or thinking about it. So the friend who was in the hot seat knows that actually this is just memory or thinking when we say it's black, but because actually only visible object is seen, but instantly there's an in memory. But as soon as we say that it's black or have an idea of black, it's already thinking about visible object. It's not the visible object.
Even we don't call it black, that is seen, not red.
Seen,
no matter we call black red or red black.
Yeah. But as soon as there's an idea of black turban, then it's not what is seen.
But that is seen, cannot be changed.
No.
So when you say what is seen cannot be changed, means that red is not black and black is not red. Also.
No matter we call it what,
yes.
we cannot change that which
right.
is seen.
Right.
And no matter whether there's memory and thinking about whether it's black and it's not red or whatever idea one has, actually what was seen was what was seen.
What about the person who has color blindness?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It's
still, right, it's still a visible object. But, for instance, what one individual sees as a concept, black,
right,
is that the same? It's not the same for another individual
right.
who sees the concept black.
So it's only visible objects seen, but then if they say red instead of black, well, it's still memory or idea.
Yeah.
So it's just the same.
What about that's not kumita? No matter who say what.
Right.
Kusima, still memory at that moment
right.
and thinking about the what is seen, who is seen.
But in this particular instance, I'm talking about where there is
a misseeing because of color blindness. For instance, the color blind person may not be able to tell the difference.
It's not a misseeing, it's a mis.
It's just thinking about it in a different way.
No, it's
but
not.
It's
a very definite difference.
It's not misseeing.
I don't know what to call it, but it's a very definite difference for the person who's colorblind. He sees, let's say, he cannot see the difference between green and
for
red
him,
or something like
for
that.
For him, that it's seen, that's all.
Right.
Right. It's still the same process for him, but it's
seeing
it's different.
Seems
it's like if someone has
conventionally what we call bad vision, but still we cannot say the visible object is not seen or is not
no, I'm not
clear,
saying it's not
the
seen,
same.
But it's not seen the same.
It's, well, just like now, it's always different visible object that's seen, regardless.
Right, it would be different for each person anyway.
I mean, the cup, if you see it as yellow and I see it as white, doesn't change the nature of what arose there.
No, it doesn't. But I'm just asking about what difference it makes when the person's colorblind.
Just according to conditions for different kinds
of thinking, that's all. Different, sunny, different.
But colorblind is not based on thinking.
Maybe it's a brain or something.
Yeah, it's something. It's something conceptual. It's physical.
What about you see clearer than the other? See? Seeing sees at all, no matter it's clear or not clear.
That I understand. But
seeing in the dark.
Or seeing in the light, like you go into a dark room and
yes.
don't. It's still seeing, just sees.
Right,
or seeing with your glasses and without.
Right. See, there's difference in seeing with the glasses and without.
But seeing can't be.
Right, I understand seeing as seeing, but. When there is, you don't have something like glasses to, and there is a physical disability, say, in the eyes or the ears or whatever.
No, I know you. Seeing
sees.
That's all.
Yeah, I agree. But what about...
Seeing sees. That.
It's not the colorblind person sees or the non-colorblind. It's just seeing which sees what that which is visible only.
So what I'm asking is, though, so then what is it then that is colorblindness or
if
somebody whose hearing is disabled or something?
Can't you call it colorblind, but actually seeing sees, that's all.
Yeah, I know, seeing sees, hearing hears, but I don't, but I just want to know what
the
difference is.
The object is different because seeing at that moment see only that and the other see only that and the other see only that.
Okay. So then what causes the difference in, say, one who...
Other conditions.
Just conditions.
Yeah. Light or something hindered it, seeing as usual.
Yeah. Like, for instance, somebody is a little bit hard of hearing like
but
me.
But seeing
just else.
Sees.
And the same thing, so whether you call it your hearing, my hearing, but actually it's just hearing which hears sound, regardless of whether conventionally we say it's good hearing or bad hearing, it's still just hearing.
Sounds. Yeah, that I understand, that there's hearing no matter what the condition is for the...
It's same
but,
with seeing. Exactly the same.
You remember that case about the dress that was on the internet?
The which?
The dress where...
Which dress?
Different people saw different colors. There are two two.
Uh-huh.
Some saw it blue, some saw it white. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember. I didn't see that
It was on the internet, yeah.
Ah.
The same picture... you show to a few people, some yeah. will say it's blue, another will, some
so
will say it's white.
Would it be also because of somebody's accumulations that one person is colorblind, the other person's not, say, or some person has better hearing than another person?
Whatever the reason, it's nothing to do with seeing an invisible object.
No, I understand that, but I'm just asking what...
Out of curiosity, you mean? Yeah.
But it doesn't bring us any closer to understanding the reality, because you can speculate, like, oh, why is the seeing of this visible object and not that, or why is the hearing of that sound
yeah.
rather than that? We know it's a result of karma, pakrupanissi,
yeah.
and other
okay.
conditions.
Yeah.
But actually, the sound heard is always different. The visible object is always
right.
different.
Right, yeah, that I understand.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you say, Sarah, whether concept is ever the object of thinking? And what does it mean for concept to be the object of thinking?
When is concept not the object of thinking?
When it's seeing, hearing.
Seeing, hearing is not thinking, so seeing and hearing don't experience concept. When is concept not the object of thinking?
Satipatthana. There's vitakka then.
Okay, or immediately after seeing and hearing, are the cittas in the sampaticca, santirana, arise
right.
with vitakka. So when we refer to thinking, we have to be precise about
right.
are
okay.
we referring to vitakka.
Okay.
So almost every citta other than seeing, hearing is accompanied by vitakka.
Mm.
So it depends whether it's eye door process or ear door process, then it's paramatta dhamma, and first mind door process, paramatta dhamma. But most of the day, thinking is thinking about concepts, like when one's dreaming.
I mean, it would seem like that.
Like even if it's concept of reality, like in discussion, it's still concept.
One of our friends, he doesn't believe that chitta ever experiences concept. He thinks that...
So it's concept for him.
Concept is like... I gave him the example of here. Light shines on the phone.
Thinking.
Yes.
What is the object of thinking? The light shines and things like that.
No, yes, the thinking thinks about the reality, and then there's shadow. That shadow is concept.
What do you mean by thinking thing of a reality?
It's a concept of many, many realities. It's still thinking about concepts.
What's your friend's idea?
He doesn't believe that chitta ever experiences a concept.
So he doesn't know anything.
Mm. No, but me too. I'm curious as to how the concept of something ever occurs, because moment chitta is so short.
Who knows that?
The Buddha.
Yes, but when you say that chitta is so short, it's not known yet.
No.
So what appears like this or that must be the nimitta of the succession of the arising and falling wave.
Right.
And when there's like the microphone or smartphone, countless processes of thinking involved.
Yes. Yes.
So concept doesn't have to be a name or a word at all. It's just an idea at each moment of thinking.
And I think it probably also, because it needs to sort of think and sums up also, because it's not just thinking about this and that and everything. It's always comes down to a phone.
That is thinking about a big situation and countless right. processes. But each moment,
the concept of situation itself is kind of a summing up.
It's a bit like talking about being born in a rich family. It's actually not
right.
not about.
Right.
It's just a shorthand
that we are able to converse or even to be able to do anything. There must be coming to a conclusion about the experiences, such as this is a cup, lifting it, and that happens all the time, right? And
because, as Ajahn said, because of countless moments of experiencing the nimitta of realities,
right. So,
therefore there can be the thinking about concepts without the experiencing of the shape and form and the impression of large and small and here and there. There couldn't be the thinking about those ideas.
And if it wasn't having concepts as object and was merely experiencing realities, then I believe there wouldn't be ideas of cups. It'll be just abstracts or whatever. It's be blur, actually. So I do think that concepts are the object of citta. Concepts are the object of thinking.
And does he believe that?
No.
No thinking for him?
There is thinking.
But he's saying at that time, at the moment of thinking, the citta actually experiences a reality. And the thinking happens like a shadow. That's why I give the example of shadow. And the sun and the light hitting this thing. He's saying that citta is experiencing some reality, and then during jhana cittas, it's shadow also.
That's why we better talk just one word at a time, or just one sentence at a time. What's the first sentence?
Citta experiences a reality when there's thinking.
When there's thinking.
I think.
What does it mean?
The problem of going back a step is because people hear there are only realities. Realities are real, whereas concepts are not realities. So only realities can be known, concepts cannot be realities. And therefore they think that means that only realities can be experienced, because how is it possible to experience that which isn't real? I think this is the confusion.
I don't think it's the only reason why it comes to it. There must be something else also.
And for him, is thinking not different from seeing?
It is.
So seeing is not thinking.
It is not thinking. Yes.
So at moment of thinking, what is the object?
Some reality.
Is it the same object as seeing?
No, it's not. Because it's...
So now, seeing sees what?
Seeing only sees visible objects.
Okay, that's it. Seeing only sees visible object.
Right.
So no idea.
No idea.
So what is thinking?
Thinking experiences something else, which is not visible object.
So... there is seeing and then thinking about other thing else?
No, he's just saying there is seeing and then different citta which arises at the mind door and experience some reality.
Nimitta of seeing.
That is sense door and direct mind door. Okay, that too. But he's saying generally, like, let's say during a dream.
What about now?
Now, there is seeing and there's a visible object and
there's
thinking
in between. Now there is seeing and thinking, right? In a dream, there is no seeing. No seeing and there's
right.
only thinking. So what is a concept? Can anyone see concept?
No.
Can anything think and think about reality?
Thinking thinks about reality.
Like a dream.
Now, according to his theory, I'm trying to, because I'm not sure, thinking things about reality, given that thinking it must be different chetasikas and chitta having a reality as having the same object. So thinking things about the reality, and
can that be in a dream?
Apparently, according to that theory, yes.
Thinking
about reality, and then concepts.
But it's not experiencing
concepts
reality.
Because of different.
At moment of thinking about reality in a dream, it's concept, which is conditioned by memory of seeing reality.
He says, I think the idea of jittas having concepts as objects might have been part of an ancient physiology. It helped to explain how living beings functioned in conventional reality. In ultimate reality, some jittas, while experiencing a dhamma, are accompanied by vichara and vidaka. Isn't that enough to explain thinking?
Thinking about concepts.
Whilst, even while speaking like that, it's thinking about ideas, not realities, that is, ideas.
I think that...
No, but he never say it's thinking about ideas. He's saying it's thinking about realities, but ideas are like... Say,
no matter what he or anyone says, whilst thinking like that, it is thinking about ideas, because the visible object is not the object of thinking. So it's an idea. It's an idea about countless realities that have been experienced before.
What about thinking about reality? It's not experiencing reality.
Yes, I think that's... it's experiencing, but
it's
not...
Thinking about thinking. Reality is not the moment of experiencing a reality.
It would be experiencing a different reality than one thinks one is experiencing.
It's idea about
realities.
Like now, talking now, like we were
about visible object. It's not the moment of seeing visible object. It's thinking about an idea of visible object. Because there is seeing countless times a day, then one can think about the idea of visible object. And there can be attachment to the idea, too.
No, I find it quite reasonable that thinking must think about concepts.
Can vitakka chetasika experiences reality, like visible object?
It can.
Mm-hmm.
Ignorance, let's say, rather than anyone, is not clearly understanding the difference between thinking, which is real, and the idea that is thought about, which is not real. So if there's no clear understanding of the distinction between the reality which thinks now and what is thought about, then there's always confusion.
What moment vitakka experience and a reality? What moment?
The one following the seeing, the sense door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also a moment of satipatthana. That's a nimitta of a reality, but okay.
Tirana, Kusala, and Kusala, and the sense, all the other sense door, jitas.
The 17 moments, right? I mean, the one that followed.
The ones in the eye door process, anyway. and in the first mind door process, well, we can see nimitta, visible object, but anyway, the reality is experienced in all those by all those eye-door cheetahs. So vitaka accompanies all those cheetahs after seeing.
And how is that different from the one in the mind door when he says that the mind door experiences a reality, right? Why thinking does not happen during sampatichanna santivarana? Why it happens in the mind door? Because since both experience realities, he will still have to explain how thinking happens only in the jhavanas.
It depends what you're talking about.
Thinking, if we're referring specifically to vitaka, chetasika, then as we said, even at those vipaka citta, sampatichana, santirana, vitaka arises, not just with the vatapana,
okay,
vitaka, kusala, akusala, tadaramana, bhavanga cittas. And then in the mind or process, the first mind or process, vitaka arises with all those cittas experiencing the characteristic of the reality.
Has anyone asked him what problem he sees with the idea that citta experiences a concept? Has he answered? Or anyone asked?
I think the problem he has is that
because he knows that concept is not real, so it's just a problem with how can that which is not real be experienced. Like if one says a purple elephant is a concept, well, he will say purple elephant is not experienced because it's not real. But the idea of purple elephant is experienced. But I think, I think the difficulty people have is if there's not clear understanding of the distinction between thinking, which is real, the reality, and concept or idea that is thought about.
He doesn't see a problem with the idea of
I don't really see why
his or anyone else's idea is, because actually it's just about reality, and we know most of the world are not interested or have difficulties, so the reason for studying Dharma is to have more understanding of realities, and we know that's it's not easy because it's so subtle and deep. Yes, this is a difficulty for some people, and actually it's what all the Mahayana teachings refer to too, because in one or two suttas it refers to how nama and rupa are not real and only nibbana is real. And you've explained to me before that in one sense we can say that only Nibbana is real, Nama and Rupa are not real, because they rise and fall away so rapidly, and the impression or the idea that is left is not reality. So compared to Nibbana, actually no other reality is real in this sense. Is there anything else we can say about it, or just like
so
that?
So who can speak that?
Someone who has experienced Nibbana.
The Buddha, for sure. Mm-hmm. So it's just indicating the speed of the arising and falling away of all realities, how compared to Nibbana they are worthless and not real at all.
The person who attains enlightenment. Otherwise, a person can say that Nibbana is real.
So for us, this is what reality is.
For those
rising
who
and falling away.
Haven't heard the teachings at all, they would say people are real, things are real.
Right. But for those who have heard,
they
people
say not real, right, and right, absolute realities are real.
So there are different meanings of real and reality.
Right.
and different degrees of reality.
Panya,
yeah.
Different degrees of panya.
Different degrees of panya. Compared to nibbana, then other realities are not real.
Even though they're called absolute realities, paramattha dhammas. So you can't actually have relative reality.
Only one meaning. Instance,
yeah. But that's the thing. Those who insist that nibbana is real will put paramattha dhammas in the same class as concepts.
No. Realities must be realities, yeah.
But realities which arise and fall away,
mm-hmm. as opposed to the one that doesn't arise and fall away.
So it's just comparing to nibbana.
To the unconditioned one, I think.
Okay, if we're talking about views being expressed in the discussion list, another one that keeps coming up, but mainly from one person, is that dukkha arises and falls away. Two. Like dhammas.
And who knows dukkha?
No one knows it better than the Arahant.
Right understanding.
Right understanding.
So, would an Arahant say that dukkha arises and falls away?
Certainly.
Dukkha arises.
Buddha himself said, only dukkha arises because our conditioned reality arises and falls away.
But in the context of the Tilakana, dukkha is one characteristic
of conditioned realities.
Impermanence is one. And anatta is one.
Dukkha is one.
So then we...
Do we say anicca?
Is dukkha?
Anatta. Anicchang, dukkhang, anatta.
But do we say anicca is dukkha?
Why not?
Anicca is dukkha.
Absolute dukkha.
Anicca is dukkha.
So that is the meaning of dukkha.
Right, but that's referring to... We're referring to dhammas having the three characteristics. But here is a reference to dukkha as itself rising and falling away. And in the same way, referring to anicca as being dukkha.
Right, not referring to a reality
being anicca or dukkha
that
rises and falls away. Because one can say as shorthand, dukkha arises and falls away, but if there's no understanding of reality, it's meaningless.
When it's said the Buddha taught the cessation of dukkha, I understand that's referring to...
the end of conditioned realities.
When you muttered, Betty, that everyone
understands dukkha, what do you mean?
Okay. I meant that everybody experiences dukkha, but not necessarily... Well, everybody, there's always dissatisfaction.
You're talking about dukkha, like unpleasant feeling or difficulty in life.
They wouldn't necessarily know in terms of the three characteristics interrelating to each other. They might not know that.
But actually, you're right in a way. Everyone experiences dukkha, everyone experiences anicca, and everyone experiences anatta, because that's what life is.
They don't necessarily understand it at a deeper level.
They don't understand it. That's the problem.
No understanding at all of the meaning of dukkha in the First Noble Truth, referring to the arising and falling away of conditioned dhamma. So understanding is dukkha.
Yeah.
Pleasant feeling is dukkha. But totally unknown.
Oh, chai, they wouldn't know that.
But the three characteristics are known by panya. So we don't talk about a person experiencing the three characteristics.
The friend often mentions how there's an idea that one has to be good first, and oh, it's all right for people like Jonathan and
without
I, but for
understanding,
those
by having understanding, it conditions more kusala.
More kusala, only through understanding. And they have the idea that, oh, if they have these very bad accumulations, that because you talk about pre-perfections, that means there must be kusala first, even without understanding, before there can be understanding.
Without understanding can be the parami.
Cannot be even pre-parami or anything. And also it's still, if it's an idea of doing something to have kusala, it's wrong understanding from the beginning, not understanding how kusala is conditioned.
Because it's to the self or I who's doing.
And it seems attachment to me doing well. A lot of attachment to me being a good person.
Like, I mean, common idea, like me being the one that has more metta or more generosity, and let's worry about understanding dhammas as anatta later, but let's be a good person first.
Until die.
Which can be intent.
Well, for him, Achan, you say instead of doing good, we're just talking about anatta until die. You know, wasting time.
And so, what is the pariyati? See? Only books?
Yes. Only books,
now,
basically. Yeah.
Read the whole book? Mm-hmm. Is that pariyati?
I think this is
100
very,
books?
I think this is
a very common idea, studying the books.
What about to understand correctly, wisely, thoroughly, of just one word, of the teachings, that is pariyati, because it conforms with other words later, from word to word. Otherwise, if there is not the right understanding correctly, perfectly, of just one word, how can there be the understanding of other word? Like Dhamma, just one word. If there is no understanding that Dhamma is not in the book, but it's here and now, anytime, that is the understanding of pariyati.
And the problem is that when it's not
a firm understanding that it's about reality now, like in this case, then there is impatience for results, which, and then one wants to go and meditate or find some other technique or method because it's not actual understanding of what appears now.
It's very easy to go wrong when the pariyati is not real pariyati, because it has to conform with the satyayana, that seeing right now is the object of understanding. Otherwise, if there is no conditions to have more and more right understanding, to condition right understanding seeing right now, what's the use of reading about or hearing about seeing?
And then they have the ideas
how the Buddha taught about valuing physical seclusion and finding a positive influence on behavior during the matter, during the day, no matter the understanding of realities. So, or the idea that the Buddha encouraged people to think in some ways and drop other kinds of thinking. So it's all with an idea of self doing something.
But there must be the understanding of pariyati as not self. Otherwise cannot be the teachings of the Buddha at all. So the pariyati is whether that is the firm confidence on seeing right now can be directly understood, penetrate to the truth of it arising and falling away. Otherwise it's not in Tipitaka.
And then
spending time in seclusion and contemplating certain topics such as breath helps condition better behavior and
only in that place.
Yeah. Or following metta meditation practice or something, they will think it conditions better behavior. So this is what they're concerned most about.
So that's not prayati at all, when there's no understanding of reality right now as object. If anyone hears about the teachings a lot and goes to the meditation center, is that prayati? Not prayati.
It's still me and my practice.
So if we say when there's a lot of concern about the akusala, that it's attachment to being a certain way, he suggests we can't say that.
So what knows?
Panya knows. Mm-hmm. So otherwise the suggestion is we're just speculating, but we don't
know. No, but actually if someone is talking about trying to have more metta or have less akusala, then still it's clear that it is an idea of concern with me and practice, and it is attachment.
No understanding.
Because dana, sila, metta, all these, I mean, you don't say I want to do, you just do it, right? Or you have metta, you just be kind. You don't say I want to be kind.
Don't set a practice or right? Try to be kind. Trying to be kind and being kind are
quite different.
Likewise, being kind and wanting to be a person with more kindness.
Clinging to self is so strong.
It always takes one this way or that way. As you say, there's so much misunderstanding about what pariyati is. This is the issue. Yes. People forget it's about this moment.
That's why there is even wrong with it for path.
Yes.
This person's view of the suttas is that the Buddha, when he was teaching to lay people about different kinds of kusala, that the teaching was just about those kinds of kusala and not about development of awareness at the same time.
Bad conditions only.
But would you say, Chan, that whatever the Buddha talked about kusala, any level of kusala,
to be understood that be no understood, one there.
That no one there, right. Not, he wouldn't say to someone who would just increase more self, to be a good, to do anything with the ideal self.
Each word is just about reality. Like virya is virya, sati is sati, vitaka is vitaka. Do good, no one, but realities.
It's like in different parts of the Tipitaka, he's
talking about different dharmas, and he's talking about Vedana. It's not to try to have Vedana, it's just talking about these kinds of dharmas. So the same if he's talking about kusala dharmas or akusala, he's talking about the nature of those dharmas.
Some ideas may be pakatupanisya for one person, another for another person.
Because you can't talk about all dharmas in every sutta or in every conversation. Like now, if we're talking about vitaka, it's not because anyone should try to have vitaka, but that is just the dharma being discussed.
But when it's not the Buddha's word, do this and do that, and people think that one has to believe and follow.
It's not understanding, Chan. It's because one hasn't really understood or had any understanding of the Buddha's teachings that one thinks in terms of doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's understanding of how deep the Dhamma is, some understanding, then it would not be interpreted that way. It actually goes against the Dhamma, the idea of doing. It goes against anatta.
Some comments about the Yoganada Sutta, and like to just come back to it a bit. So we know with the development of Vipassana, it is the development of Samatha as well. And we know that for those with no understanding of realities, there may have been Samatha Bhavana first before hearing about realities, or we know that Jhana can be the basis of insight, or depending on conditions and accumulations. And you have mentioned before that for those for whom they heard about the understanding of realities and development of Vipassana afterwards, there wouldn't have been Samatha Bhavana on its own, because anyone would understand that the development of Samatha with Vipassana is higher and there's only one path. And so when it refers in the sutta, talking about different accumulations, to those who developed Vipassana and then afterwards developed Samatha, and you mentioned...
Oh, Samatha develops by conditions.
Before, after, any time, it's just depending.
Mm-hmm. And Panya knows that.
And Panya knows that object or that Dhamma, because anything can happen. So what did you mean in that case when you said that those who had developed Vipassana afterwards wouldn't have developed Samatha, because it depends on conditions
yeah.
entirely? Yes,
yeah.
And maybe a misunderstanding.
The person who develops Vipassana understand reality as conditioned.
Yes, no matter what it
mm-hmm.
is,
yeah.
So even if it's
jhana, or if there are conditions for afterwards for Buddha Anusati up to...
If there is no understanding of that, the trap is there.
Yes, right. Any kusala can arise mm-hmm. any time by conditions.
Right. And all this is Pakatupanisepa
Chaya. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's like now, there can be a moment of right understanding followed by kusala, or kusala followed by right understanding.
Different kinds. Yeah. Could be a moment of right
understanding reality, and then a moment of metta, or development of metta by accumulations, or anything. It just depends.
That's the way Panya develops, because it can understand all conditioned reality. Strong enough to see that they are conditioned.
Just conditioned.
Otherwise, there cannot be that level of Panya which can eliminate the clinging to that object as I.
Or to having that particular Dhamma
or mm-hmm. being that
person. Or just like it to happen again.
Another common misconception about that sutta is that it suggests that different people choose to develop insight.
For them, they are people, they are selection.
Right.
Person choosing
or deciding, or this person could do this or that.
Not understanding conditioned dharmas at all. Yes, what this the friend mentioned was he
said, I do appreciate Jan's and others' reminders on this about dharmas, although at this time they don't click for me. Since I'm sure that a mind swept away by akusala tendencies, which lead to akusala deeds and body and speech, will not have conditions to reflect on the teaching in a way that works its way on Sakaya Ditti. Thus the need for what Ajahn called pre-perfections, kusala done without panya, and therefore without understanding of wrong view of self. So... this is what he understood from you, that because there's so much akusala, and when there's akusala, no conditions for understanding or kusala to arise, and that therefore this is why you stressed kusala without punya has to be there first.
Would he like to have lots of kusala without punya, or just a moment of kusala with punya?
Well, actually, this was
asked of him, and he said, honestly, I'd rather have a lot of kusala without panya than just one moment of kusala with panya.
So what would he prefer?
The first, the lot of kusala without panya.
And
so that's the clinging to self.
Mm-hmm. So he will never have kusala with panya.
Right.
And he'll have more of kusala. That's why I think Pariyati has to be all about now. Otherwise it's just stories. Mm-hmm. Stories and that.
And by understanding that is it Pariyati. Mm. Otherwise cannot be Pariyati at all.
Mm.
It's just read, and the idea of I am reading, I know a lot, I have finished many, many books on Dharma.
And that's why it's so many different kind of practice, because these stories are created to justify each person's wrong practices.
It's, as you say, it's just always, it's
clinging to the story of Dharma and the details and the reading, but not understanding, seeing now as conditioned Dharma. Not
even right now, not thinking about citta and citta-sika at all. Only what is now appearing. Forget all about that which experiences.
I think you actually, in the discussion
with Robert, when he brought up the hell realms and this and that, and that was the point you mentioned, that when there's only interest in what is experienced, visible object or the details or the visible object or the ideas, and there's forgetting about seeing now, the experiencing of what's seen, or hearing now, the experiencing of what's heard, then one is lost in the story about what is experienced, and it cannot be the clear understanding of reality now, which experiences is bound to be clinging to self.
But there can be a trap too. After hearing this, one try to look or catch the citta and citta-sika, not understanding. Yeah.
But not enough just to understand about rupa or visible object, or there has to be clear understanding of the experiencing now.
And no understanding about the detachment instead of attachment. The trap is all around.
Like you said, cheating
down the time, trying to catch
everywhere.
It, trying to find it, trying to know it, always. Yeah.
After each word of the teaching,
there's a trap.
Okay.
When one reads the books, like reads about distinctions between kusala and kusala, chanda or loba, the trap is there, mm-hmm. ready, trying to know it.
And it just shows how weak we are. We need someone like you to hold our hands all the time.
Yeah, because otherwise there is the strong idea of self. So whatever is read is just want you to do that, but actually it's not. Only it's the understanding of reality as not self. Do good, not you.
Any questions or anything you would like to bring up? What's interesting for you? What's interesting to hear about? Just trying to follow. Because we've gone into a lot of quite detailed topics, so I know it may be difficult. Anything you would like to bring up? Bong? Is it interesting?
Yes. I'd love to thank you.
talk about many things today, and it's a lot to take in. So I'm processing.
Because it's not yet well accumulated as conditions to understand directly. For example, we heard a lot about visible object that we should see, no one in it. But now it's still someone all the time and things all the time. So this is the point that we can understand the teachings that all about anatta. No one can do anything, but dhammas are now working. Their functions like citta experiences and the sankhara khanda are now doing their function to condition next moment, next moment, next moment, on and on. That's all.
And we talk so much in
Vietnam about how if the understanding now of dhammas is not really firm, if there's a doubt, any doubt about whether this is right or whether any idea of any method or technique or trying to catch reality, if it's not really firm understanding of seeing now, visible object that's seen, hearing now, different dhammas, not self, then that understanding is not firm enough to condition awareness to be aware of realities. So cannot be the development of Satipatthana if there isn't really very firm understanding of just dhammas and all equally worthless in the sense of being impermanent. Even understanding is dukkha because it arises and falls away, not worth clinging to for an instant. So the understanding now of the dhammas has to just be really, really firm. So no thought of going to a quiet place or idea that if one opens a book there will be more understanding, or trying to attend to visible object or seeing, because then it's not firm understanding of just that which is conditioned now. How about you, Kunwarasat? Anything you'd like to?
Is it interesting, the discussion?
No, I didn't hear well because
running around.
Last time we were here, there were some
bhikkhus who came to visit you. Now, this is just a curiosity question. And you were talking to them about the Dutanga practices, and Nina mentioned this, and I was just interested in why you were talking about the Dutangas, because it's not, is it because people have an interest in it, or they think it is the way to develop understanding, or
it's like fashion? To do Dutanga, not the understanding, just like propagation. Come and have Dutanga and do Dutanga. See? No understanding at all. Walk along the street and people sprinkle the rose petal and so on, pay respect, very high respect, because they thought that that was Dutanga, just walking around.
Actually, it's no understanding.
No understanding.
Dutanga is.
No, not at all.
And no understanding, yeah, of accumulations. Mm-hmm. And like Mahakasapa didn't just walk
they
down.
They talk about anything that they do not understand, but people believe. So they do not listen to the teachings, but they listen to someone, not the Buddha's teaching at all.
And they read a little bit from the text about
Dutangas, and then they think this is Dutanga, but they don't understand.
In Tipitaka, they can say it comes from the Tipitaka, but no understanding.
And if I'm not wrong, Dutanga is related to the Panya that sees danger in sense contacts, right? Those who you know, follow Dutanga are those who are happy to have little and avoid sensuous contacts? Or what is it? What is Dutanga?
think it was for those
bhikkhus for whom their natural accumulations was to live apart and just with the old robe and in the forest and that, very naturally.
That's what I mean.
I don't know
so
much.
There must be the influence of that also, that they're happy to have, you know, that
it's their way of life with understanding.
Right. And the people, the monks nowadays, they don't even see how they're so involved with, you know, sense.
Nothing related to Dutanga
practice. Could you say what the real meaning of Dutanga is?
Usually the monk must observe the monk's rules, right? And for those who have accumulation, to observe the rules and more than that, which are, to eliminate their kilesa, more than just the rule or sikha.
To live in very
basic way and in the forest and with just the old robe.
Altogether there are 13.
13 special practices. But it's with understanding.
But people, or monks today, do not follow the rule, but they try to follow Dutanga.
They go as a sort of a group teo with their umbrellas and...
They have these 13 instead of the 227 or something.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. I was just mentioning to Sukhin
at the start about how we'd had these interesting discussions in Vietnam with some of the ladies who consider themselves as nuns, and how actually, of course, we all know there are no bhikkhunis, and how your comment was it didn't matter if they continued wearing brown robes or living in a temple or not, because actually they're not bhikkhunis, so there's no breaking of Vinaya because they're not bhikkhuni in the first place, so there's nothing to break. And Sukhin was suggesting, well, it's different for bhikkhus because there is an order of bhikkhus, but actually because we don't know if any bhikkhus have been ordained properly, so we can't say whether they're bhikkhus or not, but probably not. Highly unlikely that anyone is actually a bhikkhu today. And so if they are if they're not bhikkhus because they were not properly ordained, even they are Theravada bhikkhus, then there is no breaking of Vinaya.
But because still they consider themselves.
They consider themselves, yes. And they lead others to treat them in this way or consider them as. But if they are not bhikkhus, then it's not the same kamapata or not the same results as if they were and were living this way.
It's worse for Theravada because people believe that they're bhikkhu.
In the case of the nuns, does it make any difference whether or not they went through some kind of ceremony and took vows?
Bhikkhuni, you mean?
Yeah.
No bhikkhuni at all.
No.
Nun?
Those who are wearing robes.
They are not bhikkhuni.
No, they're not bhikkhunis. But in terms of how they conduct themselves.
They try to be.
I don't know what. Do they think they're bhikkhunis?
They sincerely believe that they are bhikkhunis.
They have wrong understanding.
So, but is that their position? They really think they are bhikkhunis? Surely they don't really.
What about those bhikkhunis who have been ordained in various places like Sri Lanka?
No,
never. Impossible to have. Mm-hmm.
So they are not breaking the precepts, but they are a lot of akusla kama. Wrong view and teaching wrong,
but they let people know that they are. This is quite dangerous.
So like that is akusla kama,
a lie or pretend.
Pretend, but they don't really. They sincerely believe that they are.
They cannot at all. So when people say they cannot, why do they still believe that they are?
Who says? I mean, they just don't
the
care about their opinions.
The Vinaya.
So the Vinaya is very clear about this.
There must be sikkhamana for some years, and if one breaks the rule, then there must be sikkhamana again, start again, start again.
And actually the rules for nuns are far more than for
monks even, so it's a 227 yeah. plus, so it's all the rules for monks plus the additional ones. But in a way, for them, it's simpler because it's more obvious. Everyone knows there is no order of bhikkhunis now officially, even they do. But for the monks, they think they're monks, but even the ordination wasn't properly conducted. They're not monks, so it's...
And who help them or let them think that they are none? Per own? Or what? Or who?
For instance, John, in the case of my son, how can I know whether his ordination was a proper one or an improper one?
Who knows?
So we can. So are we to assume that all ordinations of monks today are improper?
No. Who knows?
So we cannot know who's been properly or improperly ordained.
So we can see about their understanding of the teachings,
right.
Of not just understanding but also the monks' rules too.
Well, the point is, we cannot assume that just because they're wearing the robe, they are.
Yeah, exactly, because they're not.
Our friend who had studied
very carefully said that he considered none of the monks in Thailand were properly ordained because, for example, there is one rule that if the ordination is not correct, not conducted in the correct pronunciation of Pali, then it's not so.
And everybody's
yeah, very very detailed, very very detailed rules. So actually, unlikely today that anyone is. Very, very detailed and precise.
And the most important thing is the purpose of becoming monk.
So we can't assume actually that some of them are sincere. We can say that they all do it knowing that they're doing wrong.
We don't know. That's the point.
And we don't know what they're
different motives are, only they know.
But I would assume that at some point, given so many rules and...
Almost impossible.
Yeah.
Not only in Thailand, Kusana.